welcome to our podcast. I'm happy to join our OIG gents today. I don't know officially what they're calling themselves because now they're advised guys. So thank you for being here with us. We are excited for the upcoming conference. It's the annual training conference for NHCAA. And I wanted to come on this podcast today to talk about what the conference means to us. So for many years, Advise has been going to this conference. I had never met any of the people we are seeing on this podcast because I was a vendor more on the commercial side, and I would only speak to my friends at the different commercial plans. I knew of the UPICs, I knew of HHS-OIG, I knew of the work plan, but I didn't know any of these gentlemen. So what I'm excited about us being able to discuss today is for people like me who attend the conference to know what the OIG is really getting out of it, what the agents are doing, what the UPICs are doing at the conference, what they're learning, what they're presenting. So I'm happy to be one of those a little bit on the outside, and that's why I wanted to join today. So, gentlemen, speaking about NHCAA, I'd like to ask you about in the past when you've been at the conference, what you've been able to see, get done, what would you recommend to people who are going to the conference for the first time? Anything you want to share, please.
Derek, you want to start off?
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yes,
you can start with why it's your most favorite conference.
So the ATC is my most favorite conference because it gives me the opportunity to see all the people that I haven't seen through the course of the year that I work with. But it's also the place where I met you. So does that make it my favorite conference by default? I suppose so, because that's the rule. But the thing about the ATC, I was a member of their faculty, I guess, for lack of a better term, for probably 20 years. I would put presentations in and get them selected. And I started to get a little smart as I got a little more savvy about it. And I would put in for 2, 3, or 4 different topics to make sure that I got the ability to go and speak. So the ATC is a great opportunity to meet people that you haven't seen through the course of the year. It's a great way for you to catch up on what the latest trends are. But really, it's just a place for me at least, to spend 3 or 4 days with people who don't mind sitting in a room talking about healthcare fraud for 3 or 4 days when, you know, sometimes it gets a little bit much for other people. So it's just it's a place for, I don't want to use the term like-minded people because that I think has a bad connotation, but it is an opportunity for like-minded people to go and speak together.
For me, when I was with the OIG, I was the OIG liaison to the NHCAA and worked a lot with Bill Mahan, who was the executive director at that point, and in putting together the agenda and the curriculum and getting the speakers to speak. And what I found most enjoyable about that was coming from the IG, everything was Medicare and Medicaid. Going to the NHCAA and meeting the private payers, the SIU folks, it showed that there was this universal problem. It didn't matter if you were state, federal, public, private, fee-for-service, MCO, there was fraud everywhere. And there were a lot of trends that went across all of those boundaries. And something like the NHCAA brought all of those people together and they could share their stories, share their methodologies for identifying it, share some of the, like Eric would speak, talk about the investigations and how they came about and what the steps were and how they were resolved, that it really brought home the universal impact of healthcare fraud across all types of payers. As a UPIC, I'll talk later. I'll turn it to Wade now.
Well, my experience was much like Eric's. I went probably every couple of years when I was with the OIG, and it was nice. Like Eric says, a lot of, especially East Coast, West Coast, we didn't get an opportunity to be with each other, you know, person to person that often. The occasional large search warrant where it would be people from all over the country. But other than that, NHCAA was a good opportunity to see people you haven't seen for a few years. The other, I think, key point is the the subject matter that is offered. There's so many, you get like the catalog early on and you try and decide which sessions you want to go to. And it's really interesting because you have, 3 days and there's, maybe 5 sessions each day and you pick what is relevant to your work or just what's interesting. And it's really just like looking through a catalog and deciding, deciding how you want your week to go. So that's a really good opportunity that I think is unique to the NHCAA ATC. The other thing that I think is important that I think maybe some people miss out on, you know, there'd be some people from either from the OIG or people that I knew from outside the OIG that you'd have a chance to talk with them, you know, in between the sessions and maybe at lunch, but then they would disappear at like 4 o'clock and you don't see them till the next day. And I think you're missing out on a lot, because I think a lot gets done after five at these conferences. You get a chance to talk to people at, there's usually a happy hour, so you walk around to the different booths and talk to people, but there's really a lot of interaction that happens after, you know, 4:30 or 5 p.m. And I think you're really missing out if maybe you're not that social or whatever, but there's a lot that goes on after that. So I would, if you're like a first timer or you typically go back to your room and stay there, I think you're kind of missing out on, there's a lot that's happening after that.
Yeah, going back to what you were talking about, Wade, with the catalog of cases or catalog of classes, at the UPIC, what we would do is we would choose three or four people to go, and you know, there would be a data analyst, a nurse, a couple of investigators, those that, you know, kind of used it as a perk because it's such a great conference and such great areas and so well done. That it's sort of like a perk for them, but it was a perk with a hook. We would have them go through those catalogs, you know, pick what ones they were going to go to, you know, and so that we could have the most coverage. Then when they got back, it was train the trainer. They'd come back and explain what they learned to and have training sessions on that. You know, the data team would develop projects based on some of the ideas that were forged at NHCAA or were presented at NHCAA. And we made a lot of headway through, you know, using the NHCAA as both a training vehicle and as an idea generator for us.
I was going to ask about that. So to Wade's point about new people meeting each other and learning how to collaborate, I've seen amazing collaboration with law enforcement and SIU investigators, managers from the different plans where they do get those relationships together happening at the conference where they feel comfortable to pick up the phone and say, hey, look, I think I have a case. Is this a good referral? What do you think? And then you see some of those cases become the case of the year. I know two of my friends, one from a plan, Megan McCarthy from Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield, and John Cruz from New Jersey. So in New Jersey, they had a very big case together and they won the case of the year. And we're honored for that. I think that good kind of collaboration where they know each other and have that level of comfort. I wanted to ask you, so the topics that are presented, I've heard Dave Popick talk about sober homes many times. I've heard dental fraud, where I remember my first ATC listening to how the evidence is gone because they're doing dental fraud on children's teeth, and by the time it goes to trial, it's gone. I remember sitting there being like, oh my goodness, I need to write this down. This is crazy. Or the CPT codes that are the popular codes. I know Jenny Trussell presenting on the popular CPT codes, the flavor of the day. How often would you say that agents maybe go back and use that? I think for me, misnomer, when I met Eric, I said, oh, the work plan, is that how you get all your cases? And he told me, not necessarily. So I just wonder, are agents going back? And I understand from a payer perspective, I understand from a UPIC perspective, would you say that agents actually use it as well?
I think in my case, I went as a working agent, and I also went as a supervisor, and more so as a supervisor, I would kind of see what the fraud of the day was and go back and check to see if I'm missing out on assigning those types of cases. So if I'd hear something that maybe wasn't on our radar yet, you know, I would definitely go back and kind of test the waters and see if we were experiencing the same thing in Los Angeles that they might be experiencing in New York or Miami or whatever. So it was definitely a good learning tool to go back. And sometimes it wasn't, you know, some of the stuff wasn't relevant to OIG. We didn't deal with any dental stuff. And some of the schemes maybe were just unique to, you know, South Florida, and we weren't seeing them. But in most cases, if there was something new and big going on in a different part of the country, we were most likely seeing it in Los Angeles. So we would do some, you know, data mining and check with the UPICs and the ZPICs to see what they were seeing. But it was a good good way to see new red flags, I guess.
You know, it's an interesting question. I think when I would go, I would try to go to sessions that were for case presentations on something that I either worked previously or was currently working, and see if there was something I was missing. If it was something that I had previously worked, is there a new spin? If it's something I'm currently working on, is there a way to connect up with someone to learn a little bit more? You know, one that resonates with me is I was working on a case involving a guy who was doing some bogus mail order.
Oh dear, it seems that we have podcast gremlins. We'll be right back.
And it led to, it led to me having a bunch of meetings with them and getting documents that I didn't know existed. They interviewed people that I didn't know about and things like that. So it wound up being like a tremendous asset for me. And, you know, later on, we wound up doing a presentation together at the NHCA, maybe a year or two later on it. So, I think when people go to these sessions, you can't really think about going to a dental fraud presentation if you don't work dental fraud cases. Like, I understand that people are thirsty for knowledge, and going and learning about a dental fraud case involving, you know, a pediatric dentist or something, it may be interesting, but if you're doing it at the risk of missing out on a presentation on something that might have a little bit more direct value, you got to prioritize. So for me, I look at the list and I go, what are the things that I'm working on? What are the things that I have worked on that I want to get better at knowing? And then what are the things that I just have an interest in looking at?
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, when they present some of the tools that they are vending at the time, you know, they do these presentations. You know, as an agent, I look at those things because I'm wondering, you know, is that a tool that we can use? How would I use it? How would I apply it to my caseload? And as a UPIC manager, it's like, is this something we want to buy that will make our jobs easier? And, you know, so all of that is, you know, really highly recommended for people to go and look at those things. One of the things I think is missing from NHCAA and or from a lot of things is, you know, what's the defense say? You know, they should get some defense attorneys in there to talk about, you know, how do they defend their clients? What are the things that they look for in weaknesses in investigations, and how do they attack the government's cases, to maybe get the other side of it to, you know, it would strengthen the government's case and, you know, give them some things to look out for. And also it would be pretty interesting to get that other perspective.
It's funny you say that. I went to a health legal conference. So there's a couple of different organizations out there. And I said, so what do you think of the sessions today? I was speaking to a couple of attorneys that I know. And they said, what's missing is to know what the UPICs are looking for. We really want to hear emerging trends that the UPICs are looking at. So I do think that there is a need for a connection or crossover between some of the conferences. Matt, I know you speak at many conferences. I've seen you speak many different places. Do you feel like there is a venue for, like, hey, if we could bring in some more Medicaid or something like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely there is. When I was the director at the UPIC, we'd have a yearly town hall we got every employee of the UPIC together. And we would invite outside speakers. One of them was a compliance guy to come in and talk about how he defends his clients against our work as a UPIC. And it angered a lot of our people, but it really opened a lot of eyes too. And I think we could do the same on the defense side, showing them how we could work together. Because frankly, when you get a defense attorney involved in a UPIC case, an OIG case, I think it facilitates things because you guys know what you're talking about. You know, and if we get together beforehand and you understand the perspectives, you understand the methodologies, it really greases the skids where a case that takes 3 years might take less time because you know where the end's going to be anyway. Let's just work together toward it. Because they know when they're guilty and we know when we're just kind of, you know, we're skirting the line between fraud and abuse. You know, we know the strengths of the cases.
And they want to resolve it as quickly as as we do too.
So that's the commonality, right, Wade? Like, I'd like to believe that nobody wants to see healthcare fraud happening to anybody at all. So I have to think that there is some type of commonality to both sides, that maybe we just want to get to the bottom of things. Maybe we just want to be able to care for patients, right?
Right.
Yeah. And dragging a case on, you know, unnecessarily, not that we would, you know, unnecessarily drag it on, but, you know, for them to have a resolution in a year or two, like Matt says, versus 3 or 4, I mean, that can avoid them being on, you know, prepay review or, you know, postpay review, or just where they're just not getting paid, you know, from a variety of reasons. They want to get back to, you know, submitting claims that are clean and they're getting paid on time, and they don't want to be in the middle of this long audit or investigation either.
And it saves our resources as well.
Yeah.
And we can move on to the next. Yeah.
I know that Eric had a case where the provider was fighting so much against the methodology that the attorney was using. And it ended up being like, okay, they spent so much more on legal fees than if they had just made the payment back. So I think it comes down to material. With the intersection between like what really matters, I think about audit and investigator. So I remember one of my first NHCAs that I went to, I remember hearing somebody in a round table talk about, hey, as investigators, we're all asked to become auditors. Like, we have to know CPT. Should we go out and get our CPC? Do you feel like there's enough of a connection there? And do you feel like there's enough topics out there for both, where it's materially getting us to where we need to be?
I think that's very true. I mean, you know, as an investigator, you know, you've got your inventory of cases. For every one of those, you have to be an expert. You have to, you know, the simplest part of an investigation is know the rule and know how it was broken. Knowing those rules, that gets into what's the code, what are the coverage issues, what are the regulations behind it, what are the modifiers that can be used. You have to know all of those things before you can start gathering evidence as to whether or not that person was violating those rules. Without that expertise, you're swimming against the stream. You know, so, you know, with the UPIX, you know, we had the nurses and the data analysts that, you know, we'd work all together with the investigators to understand those rules and things like that. IG agents, you know, there's the Office of Audit, there's the Office of Evaluation Inspections. There's a lot of siloing there. You know, they don't work together as well as the UPIX do in terms of that type of collaboration. So the investigators, they've got to know it all, because when they present something to a prosecutor, they've really got to know, here's where the fraud is, here's the rule, here's how it's broken, here's the evidence that I've gathered of the intent to defraud that program. So please, here, you know, let's take this thing to be resolved down the right path, criminal or civil. And without that expertise, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah, in Los Angeles, we worked really closely with the Office of Audit Services, which, you know, they had a different skill set. A lot of times they were more experienced in manipulating data, but you're exactly right, Matt. You go to present that case, you can't be relying on three different subject matter experts for different aspects of the crime that you have to prove. You have to bring yourself up to speed so you can answer all those questions yourself.
Eric's been unreasonably quiet today. He's just showing off his.
My internet went away, and so I went away.
Yeah. So I will say, because we don't want to offend anybody, but I will say this. So Eric, can you speak to the difference of feeling that you have when you go to a conference that maybe coders are at versus investigators? Yeah. Like, what would you say is like the presentation style? Do you ever feel that vendors are simply trying to sell their stuff and not really sending, like, what makes a presentation to you effective? Like, oh, I could go home and use that. And conference wise, your experience, without calling out anything specific, but more so like, hey, look, you know, I noticed that this group of people, they really are able to get it done because XYZ.
So one thing that's interesting, and I got disconnected right when Matt was talking about, like, why aren't defense attorneys at these? And it is interesting because, you know, the NHCA doesn't allow that. It's only people, you know, that are intrinsically involved on the one side. It's a little bit like the HFPP. The HFPP has the potential to be a great organization,
But, you know, for example, us here at Advise, where we run 15 SIUs, the HFPP says we can't belong because we don't hold data. We're not a payer. And so we can't be in the HFPP. So, you know, that's why we have to go to these other conferences to kind of get that perspective, because, you know, a lot of the work that I do here at Advise is on the provider side. And it is eye opening to see the perspective of things. But to your point, Jean Marie, you know, we go to a lot of the conferences that aren't like the NHCA. We go to some of the conferences where there's other groups of people, other certifications. The problem I find with those is that people are using those conferences less to learn about things and more as a job fair. And, you know, it's a little sad. You know, I've spoken at many of these conferences. I was the keynote speaker at one a couple of years ago. It must have been 4,000 people in the room. And at the end of my presentation, you know, like every presentation, people are a little nervous or shy or embarrassed to ask a question. So they line up afterwards. And I'm walking off the, you know, the podium, and I must have had 20 people who all wanted to give me their business card and ask me if we were hiring. So nobody really wanted to hear about what the topic was. It was all about, you sound like you come from a great company. Are you hiring? So I think that, you know, the problem is that the audience is sometimes one that is looking to treat the conference as a job fair. And I get that. We've all seen it at the NHCAA, right? Where you walk through the vendor area and there's people walking around with resumes who are getting ready to retire. You know, I know from talking to some of our OIG friends who are getting ready to retire, they all say to me, you know, what should I be doing? You know, where should I be going? And, you know, I'll tell them, you know, NHCAA is where you have to start. And it's a little disheartening, I think. I think that, you know, some of the conferences that we go to, which are very specific to the legal side of healthcare, there are two conferences that we go to for that and we speak at for that. Those are really good conferences because actually, Matt, they give that perspective that you're not seeing from the SIU side. You know, they're talking about why is it that they're able to beat a UPIC SVRS. They're talking about that in these conferences, and it becomes real education because this is why, you know, things are going to ALJ. So I think there's a different tenor. There's a different mentality from all of these conferences. The legal ones are really for the purposes of furthering the legal practice of healthcare fraud, waste, and abuse. The coder type conferences are their own breed of conference. And the NHCAA is really that, you know, kind of that law enforcement piece. And, you know, having been at all of them, you really have to put on different hats when they're going on.
I have one final question for each of you. So I would like for you to answer this, any one of the three. I'm going to give you three options. So one, I'd like to either hear the best speaker that you've ever heard, like something that stands out to you, not necessarily even at this particular conference, but the best speaker you've ever seen, because I find myself dozing off during a lot of topics. I'm always like, when is this going to be over? So I ask you for the best speaker or best thing that ever happened to you at a conference or worst thing. Go.
Eric, I think that's a setup for you, but best thing that ever happened to me at a conference was at an ATC in Las Vegas. It was one of the after hours meetings at NHCAA. In the conference room next to us, there was another meeting going on, and the people there are like, come on in. So I go in, it's a free martini bar and a concert from KC and the Sunshine Band. And they didn't have enough people. Yeah, so yeah, do a little dance, get down tonight, Eric. And it was wonderful. You know, it was just completely empty. KC probably weighed about 300 pounds, and it was so much fun. And it was just happened to be at the NHCAA after hours thing. So you got to go to those things, Wade. You never know what's going to happen.
Absolutely. My worst thing was I did a number of presentations and I don't really like doing them. And one that I did was in one of the grand ballrooms. So I don't know how many people, way more people than I wanted to be there. And there was a number of presenters. There's probably like four of us. I was towards the end, and everybody went over a little bit. So in one sense, it was comforting because I wasn't going to have to speak as long. But then I had my notes that I was going to go over, and it was like, okay, we have 5 minutes left. Wade, what do you have? And I had to rush through, and I'm sure it was not a good presentation. So that's one that I remember as not being good.
Poor Wade. He had to speak like a New Yorker.
Yeah.
5 minutes of commas and not breathing. So my favorite speaker for years has actually always been Mike Cohen from the OIG. Mike is one of the OIG's operations officers. He's a lawyer, has a law degree. He's got a PhD. He's a PA. He's just a wealth of knowledge. And he does a presentation every year on Part D fraud trends. And what makes his presentation great is he always talks about the different cocktails that the drug addicts are using. It's never like, oh, heroin and cocaine. It's always like the pharmaceutical cocktails. And he punctuates it by putting up YouTube videos of idiots using these cocktails. And he had one year where people were making up a cocktail, and then they were the way that they were ingesting it was in their eye. So they were putting it in like a small cup and then rolling it around their eye. It's just fascinating to listen to these. So he's my favorite speaker because the stuff that he talks about, it's like, you know, just when you think this is a Jason Isengrinism, just when you think you've hit rock bottom, someone handed you a shovel and said, started digging. Like this is like, you know, when you've hit the rock bottom of humanity. My worst was at the NHCAA in New Orleans. I had to sit at the bar at the Hotel Monteleone, which is amazing. And I had to drink their version of a Zazarac, which is the functional equivalent. If you have it there, it is a great cocktail, but it is the functional equivalent of shotgunning an entire bottle of Everclear in a cocktail that doesn't make you realize that you are actually one sip away from death. And then, of course, my best was the ATC at the Rosen Shingle Creek, where I was introduced to Jean Marie.
Thank you, gentlemen. I think that this is great. I really appreciate you sharing all this wonderful information with me and with us. I look forward to seeing you at the conference. Thank you so much for your time today. Have a safe travels to Orlando.
Thank you all.
Thanks. See you soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Jean Marie.
Bye.